This is the second part of the recording with Mr. Shula on the 21st of April 1971. Okay, back in business.
All right, after a while, nothing had happened anymore. You see, some troop bombing, so Klein out, and I, Klein was the same age and the same subject student in his own good time. We lived next to each other in the apartment house. We went out and saw that they had been working hard on Peenemünde. We could see that it was burning, and actually we heard the bombs while we were in the States. And so we could see that they had done
good job, well.
Quite a bit of thing, and maybe an hour later or so, the first refugees from out there arrived at our base, and we had probably a dozen families in our house of refreshments, and there was nobody in food, I believe, just the shock. And they need more, it's a shelter for them. And then they went down.
There were some
Then from Klein and I, after this was over, it was probably 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. Klein and I decided we go out there with the bike. We both had the bike, and so we drove out there, and we could see when we arrived here, it was probably just dawn. Is it right, first time? And we could see already in Kai Park, and it, you know, when we go from Sinovich, where we live, to Kai Park, there were some camps for the foreign laborers or for laborers, and so, and they had killed a lot.
I heard that in the report, a lot of the foreign. What did they call them in German, the foreign laborers? Did they have a special word for the forced labor group?
No.
Somebody was using one of them.
No, they had and they had already started to set up just like the guys who make wood in the forest. You know, they stack up the peas, they cut them about as long as a person, up piece of peas. So they had stacked up bodies of dead people, some without heads, others with severed heads, and things of that sort. That's when we arrived, both to Kaltagen and these later camps. We saw already stacks of dead corpses sitting there, though that naturally was not the nicest thing without having had breakfast and things like that. And naturally we went on to Peenemünde and saw so many other things, and then we were caught in Peenemünde. There was probably 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. Then there was a kind of a forest fire in Peenemünde, and we had to help there to kill that forest fire in the arm. And I never will forget that smell. It was a funny smell of that forest fire and the dead people, and it was a funny mixture. So there, often in Mala, remember that. The only thing, I guess, everything else, what went on with the bombing and so, lots of, as we learned later, lots of famous people were killed that night, and I guess you know all that. There was, after the labor camp, there was, well, closer to Peenemünde, there was a camp of girls who were sent to Peenemünde to help, you know. And there was one girl which was in our organization, for evaluation work, making tests and things of that sort. And she was also living in the Hedrup foster farm in that part, and most of the girls had been fed with phosphor or so, and some ran into sea, jumped in the sea to wash up the phosphor, and there were deep flying airplanes shooting it at the swimming girls and things of that sort. And there was one plane was shut down, and the pilot was about to be lynched by the mob. The people were so mad that they were ready to lynch the pilot and the police in the wind and take the life at that time. He became a normal person. The police wouldn't have been there. He would have been killed by the people.
Of course, that was the thing. If you look at the British archives, just a little forensic, that was one of the major purposes of this raid, is to kill as many pilots and engineers as possible.
Yeah, and that girl again, which worked in our outfit, the following happened. Her mother heard of what had happened in Tenement, and she went there and she tried to find out what happened to her daughter. And actually, all the surviving girls ran away and went somewhere, in another village, in another place. Yeah. And the mother went to Karlshagen, or whatever the name of that girl's home was, and asked if anybody knows where her daughter is, and she got the answer that she, there was a big pile also of that girl, and so on. The mother was told she was from her son. And so the mother already thought her daughter was dead, and she was, well, somewhere else.
Do you remember the
girl's name? I believe it was Ted.
Ted?
Yes. There were two things. One was called Landdienst-Einsatz. It was Landdienst, the girls from the cities had to go to farms in the country, and then they picked some of these girls. And there were different forms of these girls. Some were just called Kriegshelfer, which is war helpers. And they were not in the real, what we call Arbeitsdienst. They were not uniformed. They were civilian girls.
May I have one little question? Did you have any of your associates go to the Russians, to work for the Russians in your group?
Yeah. Well, not under my group. Actually, it was so that there was a Mr. Kretel.
Yes, I had dinner with him in Munich last year.
Is that?
Yeah.
Oh, is that so? Uh-huh. And how is it?
He looks great. He's in fine shape. He has his own company, data processing company there now.
Oh, he is?
I'm going to see him again, certainly, when I go over.
Okay.
He told me a lot of stories, but I never did figure out how many Germans actually went over with him. I just wondered if you had some associates and if you knew why they went, so to get your side of the picture.
Okay, Gottlob. Actually, he married one of the girls who also worked with us in data processing, evaluation, you know.
That's Irmgard, the one that wrote the book?
Yeah. Emgard Rohr, her name was, before she got married, her name was Rohr.
Well,
Emgard Rohr. And
we got to find her, because he doesn't have that, he has a new wife now. And we got to find the old one, I'd like to meet her.
She, well, naturally she was Kretschuk at that time, but what she did, she, you know, we got records for every test, lots of records, and that was one of her tests, to measure the perfection and go into curves and saw curves in calibration. So she was one of the girls who did that kind of data processing. And later she married Kretschuk. Gottlob, he was almost a counterfeit of mine as far as age is concerned, education is concerned, and we were at the same thing in the beginning. And then, what I mentioned a while ago, when there was a separation of test and guidance, he went
into guidance.
Yeah. And that's when we separated. While his while Emgard was there with me, you know, they married my slave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but until then, I knew exactly all about Gottlob and things of that sort until that separation came, and at the about Emgard, so I knew everything until the war was over. Even after they married, he still had to work
mm-hmm.
and was working in my office.
Do you have any idea why he wanted to in the Russian side?
Well, it was so that he was on the list to come in to the United States, like I. And he was already in the train. There was a train going to Landshut. No, a train from Middleton is from Bleicherode, let's say. He was most likely in the Bleicherode area before we moved to Kazakhstan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was already in the train and jumped the train. He was contacted by Russian aid.
He jumped the train while the train was moving?
No, I mean, the trains always stopped.
But,
sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I meant, but during the time he was going towards the American.
No, when I said some train, I do not know. I didn't see it. I wasn't there. He left. I went to the Russians. They had contacted him. They had contacted him in Plaza Road or near there. The other people left until we moved to Kazakhstan.
That must have been quite early. That must have been before the war
started. No, no.
Did you
stay in Plaza Road? Everybody who moved to Plaza Road
mm-hmm.
stood in Plaza Road until it was sure that they got an office. You know, we stood nearly his.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
but Kretrop and his wife, they stood near Plaza Rosa
mm-hmm.
until the end of 45. You know, I got a contract for coming to the United States in September or so. But this is not the time I had in mind when I said he comes to Spain.
Oh, I see.
It was late.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You know, that going down to Plaza Road,
mm-hmm.
to Oberammergau
yeah.
and things of that sort.
That
was before the end of the war.
Right. And then you went back to Plaza Road again?
Many people did go. I never was. I was in Plaza Road just in business maybe, before the end of the war. Yeah, but there's too many things.
Yeah, I see.
Okay, after we had been in Leipzig, in my case,
Leiser
Rode,
the
majority of the people in the Leiser Rode area.
Right.
Yeah?
Was in the beginning of 45.
It was in the beginning of 45.
About
as I said, I myself moved on March 9th. I was on the train. And after that,
right, then you moved down to.
That's what I had started once before. They picked out of the thousands of people, they picked 500 so-called key personnel, mostly men, a few women, two secretaries, you see,
to go to
Oberammergau. And Kirchhoff was
one of them.
I'm not sure if he was one of them. He should have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't remember that he was in Oberammergau with him. Yeah, he should have been. Yeah. I'm very sure.
That's a good question.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, we stood in Oberammergau for about 3 months.
That brings you back to July.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were released there.
That was the end of
yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of July was before we went to Oberammergau. No, then we went to Garmisch-Partenkirchen. While we were in Oberammergau, we get lost in different things. Should I continue now?
No. We'll sort it all out somehow.
Okay.
That's where you can go. You sort of wander around it.
All right. As I said, some people in the majority in Barcelona, we simply hit a test field. They picked out 500 key personnel, and in our case, for the test, there were two truckloads, and one truck, Hamburg, was the boss of the truck, and I was in charge of the truck, and we go to Oberammergau, and well, there was probably the halt, corresponding, I think, of that sort. And then we were in Oberammergau, and then the same story then, that we were supposed to be shot before we fall in enemy camp.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of
the story? Say it again. I mean, those
who... How did you find out about
it? There's a story then.
Mm-hmm.
The story then so that there was an SS. You know, we had to report in Oberammergau in a kaserne. In a kaserne. And I remember we didn't go together, Hamburg and I. Hamburg had still to take care of two things, so he left later than I did. And I went all by myself with my, our staff. And we had to report at the kaserne in Oberammergau, and we drove in the big door, and they closed it after us, and I still didn't have a good feeling. But pretty soon, we were put in and dancing hard. I didn't know what cages they provided for us to stay. Anyway, the first impression was, it's bad, and they closed the door.
You heard rumors?
I didn't see it. And then the rumor then that SS officer had orders to shoot us before we fall in enemy's hands.
Was that Kammler?
No, it was not Kammler.
Do you remember who it was,
by
chance?
No.
Did
you ever meet the man named Kummer? Hmm? Kummer? Well, anyway, there's
some SS
officer. Yeah. And the story went on that Von Braun convinced that SS officer, if he shoots us, it would be only a matter of a day and the Americans would be there. That was just a day or so before the Americans came. You know, they lost their no occupation.
Yeah.
That was the guy under Kammler. Kammler was in Berlin at that time. That must have been the guy. Yeah.
And then Von Braun convinced him that if he should die, they shoot him. And so he suggested to Von Braun that we should escape because he had to report to a higher officer. and he could not let us go. You know? So if we touch the gate, it probably would touch the skin. So the road was, we have to escape. And I was then again, we had to escape to different villages because there were too many people for one place. So again, Tess was assigned one village. I even forgot the name, but it was no. Anyway, so I went there with that Mr. Schwartz I mentioned, we too. We were together then again. You know, he had, in the meantime, moved away from Finland. And we tried to find quarters in one village. And we got a few, but not enough. So we had probably half of us stood with some farm family, like I did, being the boss, maybe I had a room in some farmhouse, and the rest had to stay in a dancing hall, sleep on the floor in the dancing hall. And so, but, then they said that the German army, since the Americans were closer and closer, they had so much supply, cigarettes, cigars, canned food, sausage, and so on, chocolate, snuff, and everything, canned, that we should go there and get our share, because they tried to keep that away.
Oh, that was
against the rules, I do not think anyone of the... It was given away by some army ordnance. We were not... We were still the villains, and Rosinski was the villain too, I believe. Yeah. Anyway, so I went there, and we managed that one of our test people, he left near there, and he had a car, so he managed to get that car to in our possession. So him and I went to that place where we got the cigars and the goodies. And I remember on the way back, the speed went over an airfield, and just when we were about to enter that airfield, there was a bombing attack with deep players and so on, so we had to stick our nose in the ground again until that was over. And anyway, when we came back, I had a meeting of the people in the evening, and I said, oh, what would you say if I give you everyone 10 cigarettes and 2 cigars, and this place is bribe. And in fact, I had just 10 times as much. And everybody had probably 10 cans of something, and lots of cigars and cigarettes and so on. And I remember the cigars, later on, when we... No, I come again. Anyway, to finish this again, so we stood there, let's say a week or so, until the occupation really came. And the occupation came, the following happened. We naturally knew from the radio what's going on and where they are and things of that sort. And I went to the mayor of that village, asking him what he's going to do when they come. And he said, I go to the edge of the village and surrender. No white flags and things of that sort. He was a very proud man.
You don't remember the town?
Huh?
It might be in the fight for mayor still around. So maybe you think about it and write it on here later.
Okay. Yeah, I just get the name of the town. Anyway, while I was still talking with the mayor, and he being a part man, no white flags and things of that sort. But he said so, the first white flag went up on the church tower.
The police was so brave.
And so him and me went to the edge of the village, and the Americans come. And there was one interpreter when we started from that day, who understood the name, and he was there in the village. But he said, all right, take people with all the guns and all the cameras, I believe, just to be able to place, and otherwise you people to stay in the house, they were to the farm. And then I talked to him and said, we are a special group here who work for the restaurant that we took it in for the armament, so to say. And he said, all right, the same thing, a guy for you. And I said, no, some of us are in uniform. We had soldiers in uniform working for us. And he said, well, if they are in uniform and are caught, they will be prisoners. And while I was talking to him, they got by the first uniform of our men who was in one of the farmhouses a little bit away from the village. You know, and, so that guy was a prisoner. He was, had to decree that, you know, we had doctors and everything in there.
Yeah.
And so after that was all over and it was occupied, the army had run through no big events, no shooting or anything. I went to the center of the village where I saw notice that there was where they get it to prisoners. And I tried to get my man out. And while I tried to get him out, I got me in.
Oh.
Yeah. So the sergeant I talked to and tried to explain to him that this man was is not a fighting soldier. Wait until the officer comes, and the officer comes and says, hand up, and they search our pockets, and so there was no chance to get the officer convinced that I am here by mistake at all. So, in line and marched, and we marched, and the chief followed us behind, and I tried three times to break out of the line to talk to the sergeant, and that I'm in there by mistake for the chief. If you come again, I'll shoot you.
Yeah, but you decided to forget that.
So,
you began to enjoy
it. So then I marched, and we came to the next, first we marched, and then that saw the truck. They loaded us on the truck. And we drove, and there was a stop in the next village, where also some of our people were. And I told that Africa, before we went on, there was an other civilian in our village. Went by, saw me there, and came to talk to me what happened and on, and he was in too.
He was there by mistake.
I could see how they could build up the fighters.
All right, and do I get too far?
No, you're going fine.
Okay, and so when we stopped in that other village, I told him that there were two civilians on that side. The other guy and me, that is the soldier from our group, or the soldier. Anyway, I said to that civilian, let's get out of here. You know, and he was kicking into the stair, though I didn't either. And we went on to Schongau, was the next largest city. Thorngal. Mm-hmm. And they tried to bring us to a prisoner camp where they get the prisoners, but this was already overflown. So they drove us to a barn and unloaded us on the barn. Again, I tried to talk to the sergeant.
You don't give up.
By mistake, no, it wasn't after all.
Yeah, anyway, because the other fellow was shooting.
Anyway, he got late until the officer comes, and I knew that. I went in the barn, and I saw a door that went into a stable with cows in and so on. There was a door in the officer's barn. And I went through that door, and I was in the backyard. And there was a wall around the thing, only a door to the street. And I knew that an army, we called them army at that time, the American soldiers. That was our name, army. An American soldier was sitting right there, where that door to the street was. And I was wondering, should I climb the wall? And I said, if somebody gives me his shoes. So I was pressed. And that walked through that door to the street. And the soldier, the guard, was sitting over to the right, and I walked to the left. And I was expecting that to shoot. And the next corner, I went to the left, and I was gone. And I walked to the city of Thorngal, where I didn't, first time I was there. And while I walked to the city, there was a big shoe store. And that big shoe store was, they had in the meantime liberated all the Polish workers, the Polish prisoners. They had been liberated by the Americans. And these Polish soldiers went into the shoe store and rubbed everything they could use, and I thought, golly, I could use a pair of shoes myself. And I went in there too. And while I was in there and looking for shoes, I saw two MPs coming in, and I thought I better get out of here. Again, though I didn't
put out the shoes.
Without the shoes, I just went out and walked towards the street. Which would go back to where I came from, and started to walk, and I even started then when American vehicles came by. They had lots of vehicles going at that first day of occupation. I was hitchhiking already, and they were not allowed to take a turn to pick up with anybody, so I had to walk. And so I came to the next village, and there is probably something of interest, which was a little bit before. No, it's fine. It's correct. I came to the next village, and I went to the there also was, usually you knew there is a restaurant, there's a dancing hall. That they most likely are, and I found that after school.
I could have fun visiting the dancing
hall. Mr. Heater, you probably heard the name Heater. He was in charge of that school. So, now of that school, in the next village. In the next village. And so I went up and talked to him. He said, how everything went, and he said that five of them were also in prison, and so on, that everything, otherwise everything went good, things of that sort. And while I was talking with Peter, a soldier came and said, you have snuff. And Peter didn't want to give him snuff, because if the soldiers get drunk, they are worse to do this.
So, was it American soldier or
American soldier? Yeah, the German soldiers were prisoners. The German soldiers were prisoners at that time. They brought us to occupation. That's the first day of occupation. And so I saw an argument coming up between Hitler and the soldiers, Army we call them. So I thought I'd better disappear, because I still had to park a long way to go.
Otherwise you'd be picked up again.
So I just walked out and walked to our place. It was not an hour or two to walk until I got back home. And when I came there, I walked into that restaurant, down in the kitchen of the restaurant, and I saw we had everyone, when we picked up the chocolate and goodies, we also got everybody got a rucksack, with their chocolate, that we can carry the stuff with us, and everybody had a rucksack full of goodies, ready packed for that day. And all these people who had been in that restaurant, their rucksack was empty. Was a big pile of these goodies out there when I came in the kitchen. And since I had, as I said, when I was became prisoner, and they emptied my pocket, everything, including watch and everything. I had cigarettes and chocolate in my pocket, but that all was gone. So when I saw that big pile of goodies, I must have been down. And try to resell. Again, and while I do that, American soldier comes into the door, and I thought, I better get out of here.
Which
I tried, and he said, stay here. And he looked at my papers. We had since I was not a soldier, everybody who was not a soldier had to have, every male had to have what they called Wehrpass, which was some similar to the book the soldier had, indicating what your relation to the military is, and so, and identifying you and so on. So I taught him that Wehrpass. And he tried to test me, so he asked me a question, what's the name of your father, and so on, and everything was right, as it was said in this thing. So he finally dropped the together and said, I'm a Catholic too, I happen to be a Catholic, and I'm a Catholic too, and took hands with me. I thought, golly, that's good.
That's good.
And, but immediately he said, get in here. And so I got into the other room, and that they had all our people together, and there was a table in front where two, three soldiers were sitting and flipping the church up and catching and ready to see it and so on. The villagers had said that we are, because we had a pass of the SS, you know what SS is? So they thought, we are SS people, and SS people is very, is good friends with the government and everything, so they thought it's impressive. Anyway, when I came in, they asked me back, and the guy who had talked this was one who knew a little English. He said that I was the leader, and that the English leader. But they couldn't do anything, so at the end they brought us to the next office, and it was a dumb other house in that village. There was an office, and he was already gone, by the way. He got too much of the snuff. He was already done, so he didn't want to be bothered. He just told the sergeant to go on to that other office. And when we came to that one part, was not the doors pulled out because an officer was in there. Only the only thing, the auto had emptied my rucksack, which was in the floor, a small pile of things, goodies on the floor, and I had written a dissertation for a graduate school, and which I couldn't finish when we left Penang, and but I had carried that with me. I had it had lots of secret stuff from Penang. But at the place, the sergeant who was there was the same sergeant who was there in the morning when I became a prisoner. When I tried to get our man out, he recognized me and he said, "Oh, you are here again. What do they want with you?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know what they want." And he looked at my book again and he said, "All right, go home and stay away from the street." It was the end of that story, and then we went home. When I went back to my room, it was funny. It was a farmhouse, and I had one room in that farmhouse. And the entire farmhouse, every door, everything was pulled up and everything pulled out. Really, everything was looked at. And